Welcome to another episode of the Gunblog Variety Cast with your hosts, Sean Sorrentino and Aaron Paulette. Sitting in for Aaron this week is Weirdbeard.
Welcome to episode 161 of Gunblog Variety Cast Radio, a proud member of the Self-Defense Radio Network. How are you doing, Weird?
I'm doing great, Sean. How you doing?
Not too bad, actually. So what's going on with you this week?
My parents are coming down, actually, right now at the time of this recording, and they're going to stay overnight, and then they're going into Boston tomorrow for a cruise. And this means we have a free babysitter for the night. Those of you who are our parents will understand. Yeah, that doesn't happen as often as we'd like these days. Also, my daughter just recently enrolled in a local art class, and the work that she brought in was breathtaking. Literally, we were talking about, like, the teacher helped you, didn't you? And I'm like, looking at it, and I'm like, no, it's sloppy in all the right places. It's just not sloppy in other places. I think it was heavily directed. They're very much on like art history as well, and they were doing Picasso. Uh-huh. So I think she was instructed to draw certain things in certain places, but they were her own things in their own places. So it's really beautiful. I think we're going to have it framed.
Cool. So how old is she now?
She is going to be 4 coming right up.
Oh, cool. So today is actually Thursday while we're recording this. So that means you're going to blow off the squirrel report to go on date night?
Yeah, they'd all do it to me.
I better not say that too loud. The wife's going to say, hey, wait a minute. What about date night for us? Oh, crap. She's right behind me.
You do date night around the podcast.
I will have to take her out sometime soon because, oh, did she put up with a lot.
And you don't have kids.
Yep, that's true. We don't have kids. We got 2 dogs. But no kids, and there won't be any.
Yeah, but I think you can leave the dogs alone in the house, and they're not going to like choke on stuff or call the fire department.
Well, that's true. I have found that very rarely does anybody call Child Protective Services when you lock your dogs in a crate.
That's true. Though, leave them in a parked car in a parking lot, and they may smash out your windows, because busybody's going to be busybodies.
Well, that's true, but they'll do that for kids, too. So Erin has left here. She left yesterday, the day before, I can't remember which, and headed off to the Tennessee area. And she's apparently having a good time there. If you're not Facebook friends with Erin, what are you thinking? You could be following along on her adventures too. We hope she'll be back next week, but we're still waiting on the electricity situation back at her home. So Weird, I'm thinking about getting an American Sign Language interpreter for the podcast.
Ooh, that sounds like a great idea. Wait, what?
Okay, so there's a story that just came across our local news. Florida County accused of using phony interpreter during crucial Irma news conference.
I gotta hear more about this.
Bradenton, Florida. It's a press conference no one will ever forget. The video has gone viral. People all over the world have seen it, and the majority are stunned by what they witnessed. Manatee County called a crucial press conference as Hurricane Irma approached the Tampa Bay area. On September 8th, county leaders were assembled at the podium and prepared to address the public. The Emergency Operations Center in Manatee County was up and running, ready to announce crucial information. But they were missing a very important person at the presser. County leaders said they were in a pinch and needed an interpreter for the deaf. So they called on a county employee, a man named Marshall Green, who works as a member of the Marine Rescue Unit in the county as a lifeguard. His bosses knew he had an understanding of sign language to communicate with his deaf older brother. So the employee was asked to step in and convey the information on evacuation orders. However, it seems that the county made a big blunder. Nothing Green said during the press conference made sense. "I knew something was horribly wrong," said Charlene McCarthy. She was shocked when she saw the press conference on television. Her company, VizCom, short for Visual Communications, provides interpreters for the county all the time. However, she claims, she was never called for help. And, you know, of course, this is going to go on for a while. But the situation is, oh my goodness, we had a press conference where we were passing out vital information on the television and some dude who does actually communicate with his brother in sign language, but wasn't up to the point where he could translate an emergency press conference, is like making signs. Apparently he made signs for pizza and bear and a few other things like that. And I'm pretty sure that they weren't worried about bears descending on Tampa.
They have bears in Florida.
That's true. Here's my question. The guy's at a press conference, right? And he's doing sign language. They made a big deal out of he was wearing the wrong color shirt. But he's at this press conference. He's doing the sign language. But no one at the press conference figured it out. No one. So what does that tell you?
That nobody at the press conference was deaf?
Exactly. Nobody at the press conference was deaf. So how did anybody see the press conference if nobody at the press conference was deaf? They saw it on the TV news. And guess what the TV news has? Basically every TV news has, because they're all network news and they all subscribe to it.
Closed captioning.
Exactly. So why the heck do they need a sign language interpreter?
That's true.
We have to have a sign language interpreter so that he can wave his arms in front of people and no one will notice that he's not saying anything. This is like, you know, when they had the sign language interpreter in South Africa that was just like waving his hands and wasn't doing anything, right?
Yeah, he was, I believe, having a psychotic event.
I just don't get it. There is no point to this. I had somebody try to tell me, well, American Sign Language is a much more complicated language than just written. There's lots of, you know what? All the guy is doing is translating what the guy is saying.
Plus, can't your iPhone do it these days? If I could hold my phone up to a sign in Poland and have it translate Polish to English, and the sign just suddenly magically turns from the Florvski sign, that's my fake Polish word that I just came up, and it'll just suddenly say stop, and it'll look like an actual stop sign to me.
Here's what I think is going on. Perhaps I'm not a very nice person on this, but I think that what's actually going on, it's like a modern version of the king's court. You weren't really a king until you had a court with all these people standing around waiting to do your bidding. You had to have your chancellor and a couple of knights and a couple of hot chicks in dresses. And you had to have a jester and you had to have a couple of dwarves. You know, the more hangers-on you had in your court, the more powerful you were. If he's just sitting there in a chair by himself with nobody around him to pump him up, make him look like he's important, then he's just some jumped up petty tyrant and everybody's going to kick his ass and throw him out. Well, that's what I think is going on here.
You also see that the anti-gun press conferences, there's usually got like two or three people who are speaking and they get like 15 people behind them that are all just nodding and smiling and clapping.
Right. You got a whole bunch of dour looking, yep. Horrible things have happened in my life and it's all your fault, you bad people who own guns. Yeah, kind of the same thing. If we can get enough people up there to make this look like I'm important. Now, does the president have a sign language interpreter when he addresses the nation? Heck no. Everybody knows he's the president. He doesn't have to prove anything to anybody. But we got these jumped up functionaries in government and oh well, nobody knows who the city manager of Bradenton, Florida is, or county of whatever, so we have to have a whole bunch of people standing by and looking like we know what the heck we're doing, when essentially what they're saying is we're screwed, the hurricane's coming right for us, go to high ground, evacuate if you can, it's probably too late, but you know that's what's going to happen. What else were they going to actually say during this press conference the day before the hurricane kicked their butts?
Bears
and pizza, apparently. This is just virtue signaling, as far as I'm concerned. We're going to have somebody who can sign language. Now, I used to do something called the Society for Creative Anachronism, and we had a guy who would stand up literally in court, you know, next to the king, and whatever they said, he would translate. And there was nobody in the audience who spoke sign language. Not exclusively. There might have been other people who could read sign language, but there was nobody who was deaf in the audience. And it wasn't like this was like broadcast to a wider audience. There was no chance that anybody who wasn't there was going to see what happened, but he was translating to a bunch of people that he could have been giving us the middle finger in Farsi and none of us would have known. What we were doing was we were giving this guy a chance to do his thing. It didn't do anybody any good. It made us all feel good because we were letting him do his thing. We can do that as a club. But why are we spending money for this person who runs VizCom to hire people to go and wave their arms about in a press conference when nobody actually realized there was something wrong? The guy could have been having a seizure and they would have said, well, you know, I guess that's how you say bear in American Sign Language.
It's the modern edition.
If it's not for people in the audience and the people at home have closed captioning, why are we doing this? This is silly. So that's my little rant for the day. Knock it off with the American Sign Language interpreters. Unless, of course, you were speaking to a room full of people who are deaf, in which case, totally get some ASL interpreters. Otherwise, closed captioning works just fine, buddies. All right, so after that big old rant, I think it's time to talk about our giveaway. At the end of the month, we're going to be giving away a cat tourniquet and a belt carrier to put it in, plus courtesy of Filster, a flat pack holster. So if you've ever seen a flat pack, you saw, you know what that is, don't you, Weird?
That's that little tourniquet thingy-bobber?
It's the tourniquet thingy-bobber. Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah,
it's a little flat piece of, it's actually injected molded plastic and some elastic loops so that it holds your tourniquet flat instead of into a big wad. And that means you can attach it to your belt. So whenever I'm wearing shorts, I carry my tourniquet on a flat pack. Whenever I'm wearing long pants, I carry the ankle holster from Safer Faster Defense. So it's nice for me when I'm choosing between shorts and long pants to say to myself, hey, I don't actually have to leave my tourniquet home. I can still have it with me. So we're going to send you a cat tourniquet, a little belt pouch if you like belt pouches or if you have some place you want to attach it that isn't your belt. And we're also going to send you a Filster flat pack. Like I said, courtesy of Filster. Thanks a lot, John. All you have to do is join the GBVC radio group on Facebook. That's GBVC radio on Facebook. On October 1st, I'll pick one of the members of the GBVC radio group randomly, and I will send it to you.
Thanks to Lucky Gunner and Remington for their support of the Gunblog Varietycast Radio. From Golden Saber to Range Rounds, get a full lineup of quality Remington ammo that ships fast at LuckyGunner.com.
All right, let's get on with the show.
Beth says it's always the right time to talk to children about firearms, and a new book, Safety On, can help you do just that. Hear her thoughts on the book and about some of the discussion she's had with the author.
It's no doubt that the topic of firearms education, especially when it comes to children, is very, very important to me. I am always looking for opportunities to teach my children and to come up with creative, clever, and safe ways to introduce them to guns and to the four universal safety rules and just being safe consistently all the time. With that, I think one of my most, important goals or most significant goals in our household anyway, is to just make firearms part of our normal everyday life. I in no way, shape, or form want a gun in my home to be a taboo, to be a subject that we're not allowed to talk about, to be something that my children perceive as dangerous or wrong. I want them to see firearms as a normal everyday part of not only our lives and our household, hopefully a normal everyday part of American life. And I think that's one reason I really, really love a new book that's actually directed toward children. It's called Safety On, An Introduction to the World of Firearms for Children. And Yehuda Reamer is the author of this book. And not too long ago, he actually got in touch with me and asked if I would be interested in reading it. Well, of course, I'd be interested in reading pretty much anything about firearms training, safety, drills, you name it. So I went through the book and tried to look at it from a parent's mind, from a trainer's mind, and from a child's mind. And all across the board, I just really enjoyed this. And I truly believe that kids and parents alike will enjoy this while walking through the life of the main character, young Kyle, and seeing things and learning things from his perspective. Overall, Safety On is, I think, an effectual educational, non-political foundation for kids and for families as it pertains to not only firearms and firearm safety, but also to the normality of firearms within our homes. Again, that's probably what I appreciate most about Yehuda's book. In our society that's so fixated on the so-called gun violence, this is not a tale of dangerous guns or scared shooters or these bad situations or scenarios. It's not about broaching forbidden topics or taboos. While the author certainly does not ignore the fact that guns can be used by bad people to do bad things, the undertones presented throughout this story help create a clear picture of firearms as a regular, normal, everyday part of our homes and our lifestyles. And beyond that, Safety On is also, I think, a fantastic introduction or refresher course for firearm safety, responsible gun ownership, our Second Amendment right, and ultimately the concealed carry lifestyle. The cool thing about this whole scenario is that I also had a chance to talk to Yehuda about the book and ask him a couple of questions. First and foremost, I wanted to know what his goal or his vision for this children's book was. And his answer was very straightforward. He said, save lives. To change America's perceptions that gun owners practice safety protocols and are not a bunch of cowboys. To educate children and to inspire other Second Amendment advocates to write or promote children and guns in a positive light. So I think that's fantastic. He basically saw a need saw an opportunity and went ahead and wrote this to kind of fill that need and give opportunity to folks across the board to have opportunity to open up this topic with their children, grandchildren, friends, family, students, however it might be. This honestly could easily be the book that you read to your child at bedtime, that he or she decides to read on his own, that you guys share often over and over and over again and have discussions about. It's just, I think, a great part of pretty much any Second Amendment family's household, and you should definitely get your hands on it. Now, when I asked Yehuda about the most important takeaway that he hopes someone could get from his book, he said, "The most important thing I hope that someone can get from the book is that a firearm is nothing more than a tool, and like the many tools we keep around our homes, it could be used for good or for bad, and that's why firearms education is so important." I 100% agree with him. I also agreed with his advice for parents on how or when to teach kids about firearm safety. He said that that's actually the most common question he gets, and his answer's always the same. In terms of education, children are never too young. Like with knives or with fire, you should teach kids from a young age about gun safety. If they pick up a toy gun or pretend to shoot, you begin explaining. Even if it doesn't register at a young age, you keep on going because it will be instilled at some point. I agree wholeheartedly. I've written about this many, many times. I've actually done a blog post called Ages and Stages that kind of gets into the details. I think that for parents and for families, it's really to each family their own, because some will feel that their six-year-old son is ready to shoot or ready to learn, where some people might feel like their 12-year-old son is ready to shoot and ready to learn and ready to actually get involved with the world of firearms. It's really up to each parent, and you have to consider both the ages and the stages of your children. Yes, age is definitely important. We know that toddlers aren't capable of understanding very much or retaining very much or really comprehending the world the way that we see it because they don't have those higher level thinking skills. But you can always teach them on their level and give them opportunity to learn across the board. And then you might feel that stages also come into play where some children are just going to be more mature than others, or they're just going to be maybe more dexterous, more developed with their skills for holding the firearm, aiming the firearm, or whatever the case may be. That's going to be something that you as a parent have to judge and make decisions on, and it could be different from child to child. Again, overall, I just wanted to share Safety On, Yehuda Reamer's new book that's specifically designed for children as an introduction for safety and for the Second Amendment. I highly recommend it. I think it's a fabulous read. It's a fun read. It's an educational read that I think many, many different levels and different kinds of folks are going to enjoy for a variety of different reasons. You can find the book on Amazon.com. I'll be sure to include the information in the show notes. Until next time, stay safe and be well armed.
You can read more from Beth at usconcealedcarry.com/blog and click on Pacifiers and Peacemakers in the left sidebar.
This podcast runs on your donations. Go to gunblogvarietycast.com and click on the donate or the subscribe button in the right sidebar. You can make a one-time donation of any amount or subscribe for as little as $2 a month. I know that doesn't sound like much, but we pay our server costs monthly, and a little help from you is a big help to us.
Felons behaving badly. Second suspect identified in Northwest Charlotte homicide. Dateline Charlotte, North Carolina. Charlotte Mecklenburg police identified the second suspect in a deadly August 24th shooting in Northwest Charlotte. CMPD said 19-year-old suspect 2 is wanted in connection with the murder of 22-year-old victim. Last week, officers responded to a call of shots fired in the 5400 block of Windy Valley Drive just after 5 p.m. When the officers arrived, they found victim suffering from an apparent gunshot wound. Medic pronounced victim dead at the scene. On Sunday, 23-year-old suspect 1 was charged with murder, attempted robbery with a dangerous weapon, and conspiracy to commit robbery with a dangerous weapon. Thursday's deadly shooting marked the city's 60th homicide this year. Neighbors said the shooting doesn't surprise them. "We hear and see things down here all the time," said Edward Zaremski. "Unfortunately, this might be a shock to some people, but in this neighborhood, it's too common," another neighbor said. CMPD said suspect 2 is considered armed and dangerous.
So wait, the neighbors seem to think that this sort of stuff is not a particular shock. So this is not two regular concealed carry holders just going about their business and one of the guys took the other guy's parking spot?
I'm guessing not, because suspect one, felony breaking and entering, felon class H, 2 counts, common law robbery, felon class G, and 4 counts, robbery with a dangerous weapon, felon class D.
Wow, I like the multiples in there.
This is not the first time he's tried to rob somebody with a dangerous weapon. And suspect two, robbery with a dangerous weapon accessory, felon class F.
So this is not his first time being an accessory in a robbery.
No. So it's not you, it's not me, it's the criminals.
It's their job.
That's a great way to put it. Baron is on assignment and will return soon.
You've heard Aaron talk about this before, but let me remind you. We're taking a survey of our listeners. We'd like you to participate. It will help us to learn more about you. No matter how long you've been a listener or how frequently you listen to the show, please take a few minutes and visit our website at gunblogvarietycast.com. You'll find the listener survey link at the top of the right sidebar. It's also in the show notes right at the top. And you can complete the survey anonymously. Thanks.
To be or not to be, that is the question. Whether 'tis nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, or to take arms against a sea of troubles, and by opposing, end them. Or, to stay or not to stay, Miguel has some thoughts. And when the hurricane blows southerly, he knows a hawk from a handsaw.
Hello, heathens, and welcome to the Shaken and Bandied About Mental Flea Market. Before anything else, I want to deeply thank those of you who offer best wishes and prayers for Florida. I do believe they were heard and that a lot of people are here because of that. So Sean asked me to explain why I decided to stay down in Miami rather than get the hell out, just like Aaron did, when Hurricane Irma had South Florida in its crosshairs. I am gonna do so even if it means I have to share some personal stuff, which usually I'm very reluctant to do so. Let's get one thing out of the way. It was not brutal self-confidence that kept me here. I am not living in a hurricane-proof bunker, nor am I a suicidal idiot. It was a long and painful analyzed set of circumstances that simply led me to select which of the sandwiches I was supposed to eat. Irma was a hurricane with a predicted south-to-north path and was about to hit a state which is only ways of evacuation are highways running along the same path. I am in Miami-Dade County, which is almost all the way down south. The hurricane was as wide as the state is long, and it measured 185 miles per hour for a good part of its trip to our latitude. I always consider evacuation in Florida very foolish, since short of a heavy armored vehicle, no car, van, truck, etc. is a good shelter for a hurricane. I know my house can withstand a Category 3 hurricane. It's by Wilma with an old roof, which is now being replaced. And I have all my gear in one convenient place. So, sort of a monster hurricane, there was no winning on hitting the road. Of course, Irma had to show up and challenge my beliefs. Now, the personal part. 2 weeks ago, I was at the hospital with my 85-year-old mother. She had been suffering from ungodly high blood pressure, which made her primary physician send her to the ER. She was given all kinds of tests, and we found out that she had suffered a small stroke. Fortunately, she did not seem to have any detectable consequences. But she was given new medications and told not to stress herself. Mom is a very excitable person. I should know it, right? I've been living with her since I was born. I am doing my best to keep her calm, even when the meds are affecting her vision and making her loopy, which she hates. All of a sudden, I have a bitch called Irma barreling my way, and I am supposed to come up with a decision that will affect life or death. If we were wealthy, not having to work for somebody, we would have jumped in our tactical SUV and drive all the way to see the family in Tennessee. But we ain't rich, and that meant short of quitting, we have to wait for the employers to say, hey, okay, everybody, get out, or be fired, or quit. You're an adult, and you have responsibilities. For example, medical bills to pay for an insured elderly. And those responsibilities cannot just be shed away. If you think those responsibilities don't carry any weight, you're fooling yourself. I did look into evacuating, and incredibly by Wednesday morning, it was becoming evident that many people thought the same way. The math was simple. 439 miles, about 6.5 hours, to Valdosta, Georgia, which is the first major city near the border between the states. And then another 7 hours or 500 miles to Nashville, Tennessee. Basically, 13 hours and 917 miles to get to family, which always beats some cold hotel and strangers. But by Thursday morning, people were commenting on social media about taking 7 hours to go from Miami to Orlando. It usually takes only 3.5. And 16 hours to get to the Georgia border. Traffic jams were bad and bound to become brutal as they did. How am I supposed to spend that much time on the road with a sick 85-year-old woman who just got out of the hospital? My fear was that from all the tension, my mother would have another stroke, this time a big one, and we would be stuck in the middle of nowhere county, Florida, without access to medical facility or hope of rapid rescue. Ladies and gents, the idea of having a struck out mother, or worse, a corpse in my car in the middle of an evacuation was not something I wanted to experience. So the missus and I decided the less crappy option was to stay home and brave Irma. I am not gonna paint you an image of bravery. I was scared for a long while. It was not until I started to see a shift in the path that I began to think we had a chance. When Irma finally moved to the West Coast, I was elated and sick at the same time since I have so many friends over there. The predictions for our county were downgraded to tropical storm to Category 1 winds, and they became a reality that beat the crap out of us for some 16 to 18 hours. That was kind of new. Now, we are usually too strong hurricanes that go, you know, hey, 2-3 hours, and we're gone. No, this time. Dude, I really hate the dirty side of a hurricane. The result, by pure luck and possibly the power of prayer, was that we had no damage and we're still alive. Mom is doing well, improving slowly from her ailment, and we're trying to get back to a normal life. But please make no mistake, it was not a good decision just because it ended well. It was a crap shot. The dice just happened to roll right this time. Life gets in the way, Murphy gets in the way, and God laughs at your plans. You will never have the perfect plan for prepping. At best, you hope to survive your decision. And that's the best you can do. Okay, people. I hope, you know, to get back to normal stuff next time. Again, just want to thank everybody. Seriously, it was humbling to see all the good wishes and all the prayers sent. The family was overwhelmed with gratitude. Well, that was it. As usual, be safe. See you next week. Thank you.
Get more Miguel daily at gunfreezone.net.
Hi, everybody. This is Steve Denny from the Pro Arms Podcast, reminding you that this podcast is a member of the Self-Defense Radio Network. Check out the other podcast at selfdefenseradio.net.
The main topic segment. More Americans have a gun in their home than ever before. Wait a minute. I thought that there were more guns, but fewer people were buying them. Weird.
Well, they can't deny that there are more guns because all these gun makers are making more guns and they have to register all these guns with the ATF. So everybody knows that there's a huge amount of guns flowing into the market. And obviously gun shops aren't falling into sinkholes because they've got so many guns in the store that they're breaking through the earth's crust. These guns are being bought by somebody. So they're just claiming that, you know, it's people like me that maybe have a couple of safes full of guns and I'm just buying more and more guns. Though really, I haven't really bought that many recently.
Yeah, me neither, sadly. So let's take a look at this article. More Americans have a gun in their home than ever before. Nearly 120 million Americans have a firearm in the home. A new poll published on Thursday found more Americans report having a gun in their home than ever before. The Wall Street Journal NBC News survey of 1,200 adults found 48% of Americans said they or somebody else in their household owned a gun. That's 3 percentage points higher than when the same question was asked last year. It's 9 percentage points higher than when the question was asked in 2011, the low point of the poll's finding for self-reported gun ownership. Well, that's pretty good news, don't you think?
That's very good news. It's also interesting news because I may argue that a lot of people in the, let's just say, the more traditional gun field would often say, if someone calls me up and says, we need to know if you have guns in your house, I mean, I'll answer yes, because what do I care? I'm in Massachusetts. Everything's registered anyway, so it's not like I've got any privacy on the matter. But a lot of people will just be like, no, or hang up the phone. So there's been a lot of statements about the polls on how many guns are in households might be artificially low because a lot of people don't want to share that information.
Right. If you called me on the phone and said, hey, Sean, do you have any guns in your house? You'd get a 2-word answer.
But this is a family-friendly podcast.
Right.
I've got to wonder, though, some of this is because there are so many new people entering into the gun fold that a lot of these people, specifically like urban people and people in certain minority communities, I'm kind of getting the impression from the people I've met, they're gun owners and they support our cause, but they aren't necessarily the standard issue conservative, Republican, or libertarian group that's been dominating the field recently. There might be a lot more Democrats and people who lean liberal joining the fold.
Also, it may be that more people are feeling less like it's unusual, because when I grew up, nobody owned a gun. The only people that owned a gun in Los Angeles County, as far as, you know, my brother, my dad, and I could tell, was me, my brother, my dad, and the people that they bust into the gun range when we were there, because none of the people that I knew owned a gun. So it was us and the criminals and the cops. So we kept our mouths shut. Maybe when people are seeing more and more and more of it in the regular news, in the media that they consume, on social media, people are thinking, well, it's just perfectly normal. Why wouldn't I be able to tell somebody who randomly calls me whether I've got a gun or not?
Yeah, that's also why we've had such an acceleration in it, is because, yeah, when you realize your neighbor owns a gun, well, that's not so unreasonable, and you can ask them about how to own a gun, and geez, it seems accessible. Now I can get a gun. And then your circle of friends will now see that, oh, you own guns now too. Geez, that's not so unreasonable.
The article goes on to say, the National Rifle Association said, while the gun ownership rate is inherently difficult to measure, the poll undermined the idea that gun ownership is slowly fading in America. Quoting, throughout their many failures, gun control advocates have comforted themselves with the belief that gun ownership is falling and that they will be able to achieve their policy goals once the number of gun owners sufficiently dwindles. Polling data on gun ownership rates is inherently suspect. Gun ownership is a personal decision, and given the politically charged nature of the topic and government efforts to restrict gun rights, some gun owners are reluctant to share this personal information with strangers. This could result in polling that underreports gun ownership. Other research further suggests that female spouses living in gun-owning households tend to underreport firearms ownership.
That's understandable.
They may not think of it as, well, of course I've got a gun. Oh, yeah, you know what? We do have one. How many times have we heard that? Well, I don't own a gun. Well, you know, I got grandpa's old hunting shotgun. And
that's my parents. Up until very recently, they had guns in their house. But they weren't gun owners.
So how do you think this is going to play out for the gun grabbers?
It's exactly the same. It never happened. They're just going to ignore it.
No.
Just like all the losses they've had with universal background checks. No. Still 90% of the people support that.
Yeah, they just are too lazy to show up at the polls.
That's right.
They just don't have the passion that the gun owners have. Oh, so what you're saying is they're just too lazy to show up and vote.
We have so much more support. Just our supporters are super lazy.
That's awesome. I'm totally going to use that on people.
Also, there's some changes in the battlefield of gun control. It turns out that the Brady campaign is under new management.
Oh, again?
Again. Yep. Now, Dan Gross is out, and there are two ladies. I actually don't know their names off the top of my head. I'd have to look it up, and I really don't care right now. I will once I get some sound clips from them. They've got now co-presidents, and it's two ladies, which I kind of wonder if they're trying to get in on some of Shannon Watts's thunder.
I don't know. Dan Gross, is that the Oompa Loompa of gun control?
Oompa Loompa of gun control.
No. Dan Gross is a normal-sized person.
Oh, right. That's Paul Helmke.
Oompa Loompa of gun control.
You're thinking about Josh Horowitz.
Oh, Josh Horowitz. Yeah, that's right.
Oompa Loompa of gun control.
That never gets old.
They all look alike to you?
Well, they all say the same thing. Why would they look any different?
They say
right?
The exact same thing.
So I think this is not really good news for the gun grabbers. If what they're hoping is that they can make gun ownership socially unacceptable, having more people tell random strangers on phone polls, no, totally we own a gun. Why? Why do you want to know this? It's not really making it socially unacceptable, is it?
No, it means it's going the other way.
So Dan Gross is out, which means that he was unable to raise his salary, which was really the only reason that they brought him in when they kicked Helmke out.
I think they also might have brought him in because he's a Democrat and Helmke was a Republican. I think they brought Helmke in specifically because he was a Republican. They wanted to be a bipartisan group all of a sudden.
Yeah, sure. Okay. But they brought Dan Gross in, and Dan Gross had a reputation of raising a whole lot of money. Clearly, the only reason they would boot him out is if he wasn't raising a lot of money. He's not raising enough money to run his own organization and to pay a salary. That is the first job of every nonprofit, is to raise enough money to run the organization, which includes paying your salary. So if he's out and we see that people are willing to report more gun ownership than they were in the previous years, what does that say about gun control going on?
That says that people are not supporting gun control and certainly not opening their wallets to support gun control.
So unless you have Michael Bloomberg handing you money, pretty much gun control's a dead letter.
I think even when you have Michael Bloomberg handing you money, gun control's a dead letter. This week, Tiffany covers a few of the everyday travel considerations that don't get usually discussed in your average permit class.
You never really understand a person until you consider things from his point of view. Till you climb inside of his skin, walk around in it.
Hey guys, it's me, Tiffany. I'm coming back with part two of my multi-part series of recorded audio diary entries from my weekend in Milwaukee a few weeks ago for the NRA First Annual Carry Guard Expo. I mentioned this last week, but I kind of took my phone around and just sort of recorded myself talking about what I saw there. And last week we heard from my Uber driver, who was awesome. And this week I figured I would give you two more little snippets. The first is, how do you arm yourself after getting off of the plane? It's a perfect example of exactly the kind of regular consideration that everyday carriers will invariably encounter at some point or another, but that you almost never hear about in your standard 4-hour, 6-hour, 8-hour level one handgun carry permit class. So, you know, they never talk about things like, well, how do you go to the bathroom? Or what about when you go to the doctor or pick your kid up from school? So here's a, you know, a classic, what do I do if kind of scenario. And that's, you're getting off the plane, all of your gear is in your checked luggage. And what do you do before hitting the big bad streets of your destination locale? So talk about that. The second is my lovely encounter with the protesters in Milwaukee, which was kind of awesome. So I'll just, I'll let it roll.
Okay, so my Uber driver was super cool. That was real nice of him to give the interview. Now I am at the hotel, but it's only 11 o'clock and check-in is not until 3. So, day in the life of a concealed carry traveler. I am stashed away in the ladies' restroom about to retrieve equipment from my bag before I check it with the concierge and go roaming around the city to kill time until my room is ready. So, wish me luck.
Okay, so I'm good to go. That took about 5 minutes, and now I'm walking down Wisconsin Avenue to see if I can find some place to eat and kill time for about 4 hours. So quick concealed carry traveler's tip: when you are retrieving your gear from your luggage, your checked luggage, once you get to your destination, if you're not able to do that in the comfort and privacy of your hotel room and you have to find some other arrangements, like going to the ladies' room to do it, make sure you afford yourself as much space as possible, which means wait for the handicap restroom to become available. And preferably, there's a family restroom or a place with one of those little koala baby changing station deals in there too. That would be awesome. It'd be nice to have a tabletop to work with. But the main thing is, don't get nervous and fidgety and get in a rush or anything like that. Take as much time as you need when acquiring your gear, especially in a compromised situation like that where you're not in the ideal spot like your home or your hotel room, because rushing and hustling and nervousness always leads eventually to mistakes. And the last thing we want when there are guns around is mistakes. So if you have to be in there 20 minutes and wait for 8 people to go in and do their business and come out, that's what you do. All right, so let's go get something to eat. What in the world? Okay, so there's a protest now outside of Carry Guard. Someone has just informed me that I need Jesus.
NRA, go away. Hi. So what's the NRA done to make you so upset?
They promote having guns. And we know that guns aren't good for people. That more people die because they have guns than when they don't. And we don't like that they promote it. The NRA promotes assault weapons. They don't want us to have
guns. So how many people die because they have guns in a year?
I mean, if you look at the statistics, I mean, you have to know.
But how many people is it? Do you know?
The exact numbers?
Uh-huh.
Well, all you have to do is look it up. The numbers are out there. This is not something made up in my head.
No, I understand, but you just said that there are more people die from having guns than from not having. So that's a measurable.
Well,
so what are the numbers?
Well, as I said, I wouldn't have that in my head, but if you look it up, you'll see.
So you don't know what the numbers are, but you're just saying that it's more?
It's a reality. We're not doing false facts. It's a reality.
Okay. But you don't know what the facts are, though? But you know they're not false?
If you look at the facts and read the materials, people who have guns have a larger chance of being killed than those without, because as soon as somebody sees you with a gun, they're going to shoot you because you have threatened them. And a gun does not support you, does not make you safer, it makes it more dangerous.
So that's if they don't reality. See you with the gun, then they won't shoot you? Is that what, I guess the converse would also be true?
I'm playing word games.
No, I'm asking you. I promise I'm not playing word games. You said if they see you with the gun, they'll shoot you. So are you saying that if they don't see you with the gun?
I'm just talking common sense.
Yes, ma'am.
I live in the inner city. I know about guns. I've seen somebody dead. Mm-hmm. So I know this.
I have too. I have family members who've died, so I know it too.
Okay, so but having a gun isn't going to make you safer. In fact, you'll act more foolhardy because you think you're safer.
Ah, okay. Thank you, ma'am. That was interesting. So this sign says, no KKK, no NRA, no neo-Nazis, USA. I'm not really sure what the NRA has to do with the KKK and neo-Nazis, but hey, they saw fit to put them all on the same sign. That's very, very strange. Meanwhile, the police officer next to me is on the most beautiful horse I have ever seen. It's absolutely amazing, just wonderfully beautiful horse. Ah, that horse is so majestic. I love horses. Wow, this horse just took a huge dump. There's a giant pile of it right there on the sidewalk. That's kind of awesome. I guess that's what the horse thinks of the protesters. Pretty funny. Now, not only does it sound like out here, but it smells like too. Okay, so let's see, where do I begin? I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time psychoanalyzing that exchange. I just found it to be entertaining, quite frankly. I will leave it to Weird Beard to dissect the arguments, because that's what he does spectacularly, and I wouldn't dare tread on his terrain. But you know what was the best part of this protest? The absolute best part of the protest was the guy on the saxophone rocking Marvin Gaye. Hello? I mean, how often do you get to ride out to Marvin Gaye at a protest, right? So even while I'm kind of snickering at this woman and her ridiculous arguments, I'm also sort of bobbing my head at Inner City Blues playing in the background on the sax. So kudos to the random dude at the protest. And he was one of the protesters, by the way. He was in the line. Now, I don't know if he just invited himself or if he was part of their deal, but hey, at least while I was listening to that lady blab on and on about the ills of firearms, I was able to be serenaded with Marvin Gaye. So on that note, I'm going to close this out with a little taste of Marvin Gaye, Inner City Blues. And until next time, y'all stay safe and keep it centered and even.
Da-da-da. You can follow Tiffany at frontsightpress.com.
Cerakote is a polymer ceramic composite coating that can be applied to metals, plastics, polymers, and wood. It's also what will take your plain Jane firearm from basic to full custom. Whether you want a handgun coated in just a single color, your hunting rifle camouflaged for your specific environment, or your competition pistol sprayed in purple, white, and black Carolina Cryptic, you want Carolina Ceramic Coating to do the job. Bud and his team of skilled technicians will carefully disassemble and clean your firearm, professionally apply the Cerakote in your choice of colors and patterns, and return your firearm to you in perfect working order. And they also do auto engine parts. When I wanted my competition handgun Cerakoted, I trusted Carolina Ceramic Coating, and you should too. Check out their work on Instagram. Search at CerakoteNC, that's at CERAKOTENC, or go to CarolinaCeramicCoating.com. And now it's time for Blue Collar Prepping with that bratty kid sister of the gun blogosphere, Erin Paulette.
Come on, every pony! It's time for Blue Collar Prepping with Erin Paulette!
As I write this, I'm comfortably ensconced at Castello Sorrentino, enjoying the delightfully cool North Carolina weather. The reason I'm able to enjoy it so much is because Hurricane Irma largely missed my part of Florida, contenting herself with knocking down trees and power lines. This means I no longer have to worry about the safety of my family or the integrity of our house, and my evacuation has become a vacation. Despite all this, though, I'm still having trouble shaking the feeling that I am now 2 for 2 at being a gigantic pussy when it comes to hurricanes. After all, what kind of prepper am I if I choose not to rely upon those preps, but instead run away at the first opportunity? Friend of the show Josh made a great point last week when he posted this to the BCP Facebook group. It occurs to me that training with a firearm and preparing for disasters are very similar. In both cases, you are gathering the tools and knowledge to handle a situation if it gets bad. In both cases, your education tells you to leave the area as soon as it seems likely that things actually will go bad. End quote. And I believe this with 100% conviction. Just like concealed carriers believe you win every gunfight you avoid, we preppers believe that we survive every disaster we aren't present for. Sure, you might be able to outdraw or outshoot a bad guy, but that doesn't mean you'll get through the experience unscathed. You might get hurt anyway, or be arrested and tried for murder by an overzealous prosecutor, or be harassed by the media and hated by your community. Similarly, if you rely on your preps to get you through a disaster you could have avoided, at the very least you've consumed those preps and need to replace them. Progressing up the scale of awful, take a moment to realize that surviving a disaster and surviving a disaster unscathed are two completely different things. If you're crippled, but you lived, then technically, you've survived. Now, I understand that there are some situations where people cannot evacuate. Perhaps you have a family member who cannot be moved, and evacuating without them would be the same as abandoning them. Perhaps you don't have a car or the funds required to get out. Perhaps you have a job as an emergency responder, and it's your duty to help those who didn't leave. In all of these cases, I understand why you didn't go, and I don't fault you for your choice. But what gets me are the people who have the ability to leave but choose not to evacuate. Like my parents, who say, "We evacuated once back in 2003. We were stuck in traffic, and the dogs were hot, and we couldn't find a hotel that would take us and our pets. We're just going to stay behind." To me, this is like saying, "We'd rather risk death than be inconvenienced by an evacuation." I don't get this. I don't. It's like hearing the anti-vaccine folks talk and realize they're saying having a dead child is preferable to having one with autism. So I just leave at the first sign of impending doom because the best prep is not gear, not training, but the ability to get yourself out of dangerous situations. And the best way to get out of dangerous situations is not to get into them in the first place. This is why I'm up here in North Carolina, enjoying lovely weather and power and internet, while my family are sweltering in summer Florida heat without air conditioning. Yep, they really saved themselves some inconvenience, didn't they?
The Joyce Foundation shell group, States United, has cooked up a video game to oppose concealed carry reciprocity and gets reactions from alleged real people.
in This Week in Anti-Gun Nuttery.
So States United to Prevent Gun Violence, also known as Ceasefire USA, is a Chicago-based Joyce Foundation's umbrella group for all their anti-gun activities. This is the group behind many of your state-based gun control groups. They use the naming convention of Ceasefire in the Name of a State, or State Against Gun Violence. They have published a video against concealed carry reciprocity. They call it
Carrier or Killer.
Believe it or not, America's politicians are proposing laws to force us to accept guns everywhere. Laws that make it easier to carry guns in public in all 50 states.
Can you imagine that? Your concealed carry permit would work exactly like your driver's license. As someone who travels out of state fairly often, this is an awesome idea. North of Massachusetts is all constitutional carry, so that's awesome. But south of me, we have places like New York, Connecticut, Rhode Island, and New Jersey. Given that the state of New York stretches from the Canadian border to the Atlantic Ocean and has no provisions for out-of-staters to lawfully carry guns, this law seems very necessary.
Now imagine you find yourself in a restaurant, or even a school, and you see someone walking towards you with a gun. Would you know what to do?
This, of course, is an intentionally vague question. Are they talking about a police officer in uniform? Of course not. This is designed to cause fear of open carry. But if somebody is walking around with a holstered pistol and going about their day, obviously there's nothing to be concerned about. If the person is brandishing a gun and/or opening fire, now that's something to be concerned about. Also, we must remember that the law that they are targeting is a concealed carry law, not an open carry one.
Loose gun laws have already led to confusion. Just listen to this 911 operator's response to an incident that led to 3 deaths in Colorado.
He still shouldn't be holding that gun.
Well, it is an open carry state, so he can have a weapon with him or walking around with it.
This incident in question is the Planned Parenthood shooting in Colorado Springs, Colorado. What they fail to mention is the 911 did indeed dispatch officers to the scene, and the caller openly states that she doesn't know if it was a real gun or a BB gun. But she stated at the time that she didn't think the man posed a direct threat to anybody. The police dispatch wasn't an urgent one. But if that was what the 911 caller told you, would you have done any different? This, of course, is the only example they have. And again, it's an open carry incident, and one where the man was carrying a rifle.
With too many guns on the streets as it is, and Washington playing games with our safety, States United to Prevent Gun Violence created a game of its own, so players can experience what is becoming a dangerous new reality everywhere.
So first up, violent crime is going down. Furthermore, states are switching to a constitutional carry model at a fairly rapid rate, and all of these states have enjoyed a drop in violent crime as a result. Compare that with states who have recently enacted new gun control laws who've experienced an increase in violent crime. Second up, they didn't create a game. They just mocked up a video player in an arcade cabinet and called it a game.
Introducing Carrier or Killer, the video game that forces you to decide whether someone's a carrier or a killer. Try it yourself. But remember, just like in the real world, you have to act fast. Ready?
So the interface is quite simple. The console plays a video clip and you have 2 buttons, carrier or killer. So the video shows one of the clips, a man and a woman walking down the sidewalk, both with pistols in their hand at their sides. How would you feel about this? I wouldn't like it a bit. A gun drawn and in the hand is considered brandishing in most jurisdictions, and generally not a safe or good way to carry a gun.
Did you guess carrier? If so, you'd be dead wrong.
Well, I don't know about you, but I guessed right. They used to have the game set up on a website. It was pretty easy. If I remember correctly, there were 5 videos, and I got one of them wrong. Unfortunately, after only a few months, they pulled down the website. Obviously, it was a powerful tool for their cause. In some of the videos, I did recognize the shooter from the news. But in most, I just guessed using the same logic I explained above. Somebody just carrying a gun isn't something to be concerned about. Somebody brandishing is generally going to be a threat. Oh, and again, all the scenes are open carrying, in a campaign against a concealed carry law. So the couple in the video in question are the husband and wife who executed a pair of cops at a Las Vegas pizza joint. Ironically, they were confronted by someone lawfully carrying. Unfortunately, the good citizen failed to recognize the two were acting as a group and was shot in the back as he ordered the husband to surrender. All that being said, the armed confrontation did change the couple's tactics and aided the police in eventually killing them.
Here's what people said after playing the game.
Okay, now comes the fun part. For longtime listeners of the show, you might remember episode 33. There I talked about a video where a fake gun shop was created in New York City, and allegedly this shop only sold guns that were used in murders or fatal accidents. Of course, the guns were as fake as the shop, and the people who were customers of the shop turned out to be paid actors working off a script. I suspect the following people are all actors, and all responses are scripted.
The footage was super scary. Everybody had a gun, and how can you possibly know?
How could you know? Again, the person with a gun in a holster and minding their own business isn't going to be a threat. And again, states that have relaxed their gun laws have had less violent crime, which means life gets less scary, not more. Still, listen to this expert commentary.
I think he's a killer. Come on, he's got two things.
He's a killer because he has two things. This is not the kind of person you need to have as your spokeswoman, nor is her friend.
It makes me feel angry. It makes me feel sad that our country has come to this.
Our country has come to this? This country was founded under the principle that the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. And we became a country because the average people had guns and used them to repel a tyrannical British rule. States United is headquartered in New York City, and these people are all likely from New York City. I'm appalled and angry at the gun laws, not to mention the knife laws, in New York City and state. I'm also disgusted that I can't cross into normal America from New England without crossing a state that will not under any circumstance allow me to carry a gun. New York and my home state of Massachusetts are so radically different than the rest of the country, this is why we need concealed carry reciprocity.
I get nervous. I was talking to a friend of mine and I get nervous thinking, oh my God, this person is unstable. What if they had a gun?
Okay, if you haven't watched the video, you need to watch it for this lady. I can't imagine finding someone who's more of a stereotypical pearl-clutching basket case. Her shoulders are hunched up, her eyes are bugging, and she's shaking like a dog passing peach pits. Who's unstable again?
The game made me feel very uncomfortable and unsure about what the future is holding for us.
Now this guy was hilarious on so many levels. I think that's a French accent. I wonder if he's heard of Charlie Hebdo. Second up, this mocked up game was set up in a pool hall and bar. Meanwhile, this dude's carrying a small child when he gives his reaction. Does he bring the kid to a bar? He isn't holding the kid as he's playing the game. Did he leave him outside? He's wearing the exact same clothes, so these aren't shot at different times. Of course, you know he's an actor working off a script and was likely told to bring the kid along for effect. It makes a lot more sense.
If I saw someone get on the train with an AK-47, it would worry me.
Me too. I'm not a huge proponent of open carry. I think it should be legal, as there are some times when you just need to open carry. And legal open carry means that if your gun gets briefly exposed while you're concealed carrying, you don't go to jail. But rifles are different than handguns. They're better than handguns in every way when it comes to personal defense. But they're bigger and heavier, meaning they make the whole going about your day minding your own business a pain in the rear. Further, in some open carry demonstrations, I've seen folks carrying slung rifles at low ready. I'm sorry, that's brandishing if you ask me. With a rifle, it's very hard to maintain positive control of the gun and not brandish it. That's why I agree with this guy being against open carry of long guns. Thankfully, concealed carry reciprocity has nothing to do with this.
The fact that I couldn't pick who is a bad guy and who is a good guy is really terrifying.
They didn't supply one basket case, they supplied two! But maybe you couldn't pick out the good guys from the bad ones because you're a nut. Oh, and a shill who's following a script.
And if this law gets passed, like I said, I don't know how I'm going to sleep at night.
Yep, tears. How will you sleep at night? The same way Americans everywhere do. In your bed, safely. And unlike in your anti-gun New York City, you won't be constantly hearing police sirens and seeing your town in the nightly news talking about murders.
Contact your representatives and tell them to vote no on federally mandated concealed carry.
Boy, they ended that with a whopper. Mandated concealed carry? No, this is reciprocity, exactly how driver's licenses work. You know their side's on shaky ground when all they have to support their agenda is bad faith arguments.
In addition to appearing here, Weird is a regular host on The Squirrel Report and blogs at weirdworld.com. That's W-E-E-R-D world.com.
Plug of the week, Eddie Eagle.
Yeah, I think I talked about it after the NRA show. My wife sent me down to Atlanta with a mission. We need to start talking to my daughter about gun safety because she's getting to an age where she's starting to figure out that guns are a thing and she has the ability to get into stuff. So I went and grabbed all the Eddie Eagle stuff I could and exposed it to her. And I believe I said it on the show before that she loved it. She flipped on it. She was singing the song. She wanted to watch it again and again and again. And all well and good. But how well does it work? Well, let me tell you how well it works. I don't think I've talked about it on this show, but listeners to my other shows know that I have a bug assault. It's a pneumatic shotgun that shoots table salt at flies and kills them dead.
Mm-hmm.
You will often find me wandering around my backyard looking like a total buffoon with this thing, but it's so much fun that I don't care. Shooting flies and other winged insects. I was cooking dinner one evening, so I would be shooting flies and then I'd set the gun down. And by the way, by gun, I mean it is like a bright yellow, looks like a squirt gun. It's a bright yellow thing. I would set it down and go over to the grill and flip the meat. And my daughter would come over and go, "Daddy, Daddy, a gun. I'm telling you, that's a gun. Do you touch it?" "No." "What if you really want to touch it?" "No, no, I don't touch it." "All right, now put it someplace else so I can find it again." So yeah, no. Eddie Eagle, you are awesome. I had some faith. I had no faith. I did not expect it to work that well.
Well, co-host emeritus Adam said basically the same thing about Eddie Eagle. He's got two sons. His wife does something with children. I don't want to get too far into what it is she does, but his wife does this stuff with children and said, you know what? That is pitch perfect for the age group you're aiming at. Just to grab them and have them say, "This is the coolest thing ever. I'm going to pay attention. I'm going to absorb the lesson." And the lesson is pretty simple.
Stop. Don't touch. Run away. Tell a grown-up. Stop. Don't touch. Run away. Tell a grown-up.
And I got to tell you, it seems kind of, I don't know, juvenile, kind of silly, kind of dumb. I just can't get into it myself. I mean, you know, it's catchy. It's got a beat. It's cool. But it's not something that I could understand why it would be effective. So you're telling me that this animated eagle dancing around and singing Stop, Don't Touch actually works?
That's what I'm saying.
Do kids sing along or something?
My daughter sings along.
Seriously?
Oh, God. Yeah. She knows the lyrics. She likes any song. She knows the lyrics to like Katy Perry and things like that as well. So anything that's a song, she's going to sing it. And that's understandable, but I like the fact that, again, she's also internalizing what she's singing. It's not just that. She knows that you don't touch guns. Interesting enough, she really didn't have much interest in guns before I came back with this. Now she recognizes guns and immediately go, "Well, and what do you do if you find a gun? You don't touch it, and you're telling a grown-up." Awesome, sweetie. Awesome.
A quick reminder, join Gunblog Varietycast Radio Group, that's GBVC Radio Group on Facebook. October 1st, I'm going to pick one person at random and send you a cat tourniquet, a belt pouch, and courtesy of Filster Holsters, a Filster flat pack carrier to carry your tourniquet in. Well, that's our show for the week. Remember that Gunblog Varietycast Radio is a member of the Self-Defense Radio Network.
Find the show notes at gunblogvarietycast.com/episode161.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Gunblog Varietycast. Music courtesy of Rob Allen at blog.roballen.com. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Google Play Music. This podcast is made possible by the Firearms Policy Coalition and by contributions from listeners like you.
Felons behaving badly. Second suspect identified in Northwest Charlotte homicide. I never realized how hard Northwest Charlotte was to say.
I don't think I've noticed either. Let me try it. Northwest Charlotte. Jeez, that's fucking hard. for Mushmouth Weird.
Dateline, Charlotte, North Carolina.
Wow, I like the multiples in there.
This is not the first time he tried to rob somebody with a firearm. This is not the first time he's tried to rob somebody with a dangerous weapon. That's 3 percentage points higher than when the same question... Oh, I can't read that.
This is an ASL.
Yeah. Wait. You caught that, right? That's 3 percentage points higher than when the same question was asked last year. It's 9 percentage points higher than when the question was asked in 2011.
This is a URS production.